You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro, who is the Deputy Chairman of Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. David, I think what happened on Friday, it didn't startle me, but it sent a shot across the bowels of the bulls, because suddenly, instead of the market bouncing back after a little bit of a wobble the day before, it actually embellished its sell-off. And on Monday, today that is, the market is bouncing back, but not with the sort of vigour that one would have expected and one has become used to over the last 11 years.
No, you're right. Look, Friday was expected. And I think the bounce back is pretty weak. But I think market was kind of almost positioning itself for some kind of setback. January was a little too strong for everybody. I'm just looking at the futures now, you know, up about 0.5%. So we're likely to bounce off the bottom. But I'm not quite sure what momentum is actually going to take it from beyond here. You know, most of the big results are now out the way, unless you believe that, unless the story of the coronavirus just starts to fade, which I think it's going to do, and people believe that's a sign to get in. I don't see that, Lindsay. I honestly just think we're in a, you know, one of these periods where it's going to take a bit of time to get people's confidence up and get into the market. Not that there's anything wrong. You know, there's nothing really seriously wrong with markets at the moment. But I think it's just a bit tired and stretched. You know, stretched in a fatigue way.
Yeah, and when it comes to the real business of what drives stock markets, of course, that's corporate earnings, and we've had some good earnings out, and we've got Alphabet coming out tonight. But on the other hand, you do have something that is an extraneous factor and something that corporates can't really control. But on the other hand, it's very, very impactful, and it's the coronavirus. I have my own views on this thing. What are your views?
Yeah. Look, it's I was reading a report on Bloomberg, which kind of almost identified or what's the word, put it into context. There were 75 million people who were struck down by flu in the United States, 10,000 of whom died. You know, and I would imagine those are older people who got a severe bout of pneumonia and didn't survive it, you know, brought on by flu. And that gives you 10,000 deaths, which wouldn't be reported because that's probably the norm in a flu season. So I think the worry, and this is the big thing, is the impact that the shutdown is going to have on the Chinese economy. And we can't ignore that. This was a busy season. It's a time when everybody travels, when they spend, see families, and so on. So from that point of view, there are going to be consequences. The government has come in and reduced rates and inflated the economy by pumping liquidity, in which you have to do. Because if you're a little shopkeeper and you're getting no business, of course you're going to be under pressure, and they don't want you to fold as a result of that. But we go, you know, we've seen it in Disney. We've seen it in all the companies like Estee Lauder, the luxury companies like LVMH, the travel companies, shipping companies, you know, those leisure companies and that. So they're under pressure, and we're going to have to kind of work our way through the consequences of that. We'll overcome it. But I think, Lindsay, it came at a time where I think people were tired. You know, that's a little bit exhausted and needed to take a breather and re-establish where they are and reassess where they are. So I'm not bearish, but I think this can go on for a bit.
I think it can as well. And I think the point here is, if the market was on its knees, let's say that there was a coronavirus in 2008 when the S&P was well below 1,000. In fact, it was 666. Mm. You wouldn't get the same impact as when the S&P is at the elevated levels that it is, 3,300, 3,250, whatever it is. But have a look at this number now. I was watching a television program this afternoon. Macau, which is a semi-autonomous Chinese province, its population is 600,000 people. Guess how many visitors it has per year?
It must be millions, because this is where they come to gamble.
Exactly. So it's the gambling capital of the world. Yeah. It's much, much bigger than Las Vegas. Never mind Las Vegas. Yes. Macau is the place. Yeah. 40 million people per year visit a country or a territory that has a 600,000 population. In the last, actually in January, the visitors were down 90% on the previous year. on the previous year, previous January. So what I'm saying is that people, how does that not impact your income? How does that not impact your economy? How does that not impact the Chinese GDP? It's an extraordinary number.
It will, and that's what we're going to suffer the consequences. You know what's taken the biggest knock are commodity prices.
Yes.
The iron ore price was holding pretty steady around about $94 a ton. I'm giving you the number I watch, so it just some people might watch other numbers. And it was holding then and held there for quite some time. It's back at 77 or thereabouts now. So that's a big chunk off. Iron ore. We've seen copper come down 5 or 6%, and the same thing. There was a sell-off in commodities in November. We recovered and we backed down again. And even the stimulus that they hope to introduce hasn't really turned things around. So commodity prices are coming off, and that's where we, as an export nation, are feeling it because it's going to hurt us. You know, I'm talking South Africa. It's going to hurt the market, and it's been reflected in the miners. So don't – of course there are going to be consequences and, you know, quite dire consequences in sense of what Starbucks, you know, closed a huge number of their stores in China. People are not traveling and so on. So – we're going to have to count that up and what it means for markets. Lindsay, just one thing.
Yes.
America's kind of immune from this. You know, its external balances are pretty low. In other words, in terms of exports and imports, it's pretty much an economy that functions by itself.
But what about Apple? Apple production facilities, for example. I mean, we're talking about companies that are driving the New York Stock Exchange and every other exchange and indices, and they're having to close things down, and they're non-productive at the moment because people can't get to work.
But the consumption side won't be affected too much, you know. So there are supply chain issues that will arise. So it'll hurt, but I don't think it's going to hurt to the extent, you know, of maybe China. So I'm not brushing it aside by no means, but I'm merely saying that these are temporary issues. They will overcome. You know, they will be overcome. But I think even against that, I think that these kind of shocks sometimes just leave investors a little shaken and say, okay, let me go back, let me go on holiday, let me go and gather my strength, and I'll come back later and reassess the situation. So while we're bouncing today and S&P futures, you know, might come up 0.5% off those lows that we saw, which will keep us positive for the year, strangely enough, in the U.S. markets, I don't think there's much behind it. You know, there's much momentum or interest to really get it up from beyond that. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't get a feeling that everybody wants to rush in now and, you know, pick up the market.
Quite right. Let's talk about South Africa now, because we had a piece of data which is a monthly event, and it's the PMI, that's the Purchasing Managers Index, and that's when people go around with a clipboard and say, excuse me, Mr. Manufacturer, what do you think about the future, and how are your inventories, and what's the business activity, what's your new sales orders? And it was awful. In January, South Africa's manufacturing sector continued to signal a deterioration in operating conditions. The PMI declined from 45.2 from 47.1 in December. Now, that means that it's below 50, which means it's contracting and continues to contract. Yeah. And we've had this contraction for many, many months now.
Yeah. It's a gauge of what lies ahead. And I think it's an indication of what we're feeling in this economy. The JSE feels very, very light. You know, it's under enormous kind of pressure, and it's right across the board. They're the odd shares that are holding up, which are mainly on the gold or platinum side, which are safe havens in these difficult times. But I mean, go beyond that. It's beginning to hammer on our banks and hammer at our industrials. And I keep saying, I think this is going to be a very difficult year for the JSE, because companies that have held out for a couple of years are going to feel the pinch in the third year. They can't cut the bottom line anymore. No, they can't hold off the capex anymore. Yes. And I think all of this is going to hurt. So while there are a lot of bottom pickers and people looking for cheap entry points, I'm not sure that this is the right time. You know, I still think we're going to see worse. Lindsay, there's no need to rush into our market. You know, there's nothing ahead. There's no big dramatic changes that we see ahead in terms of economic growth that should compel you to to look at this market. As harsh as it sounds, I'm merely just looking at the fundamentals. I'm not making a political statement. I'm saying it looks rough out there.
You don't have to apologize to me. I mean, I'm looking at a company now that relisted.
Well, I'm hoping people listen this.
There was a company that was a stalwart of the JSE for decades and has now come back to the exchange today. The name is Tonga Hewlett Limited. $489, the prevailing price as we pre-record this. 63% weaker.
Yeah. Well, the company's got no money. It's got no profits. It's trading at a market cap of $650 million.
Yes,
I mean,
and its
that's
debt
half
is
the
what?
Size of Sasfin. do you understand what I'm saying to you?
I know exactly what you're saying.
Rolling
to me.
Fields of sugar in Mozambique, in Zimbabwe, all over the place. I think Malawi. It's got factories. It's got a headquarter with some beautiful paintings in it. And it's got a starch and glucose factory. And it's smaller than Sasfin, half the size of Sasfin. That gives you an idea of the value destruction that has taken place. And it owns, rolling fields there that it's... They can't sell them in KZN, in Mshlanga, that whole area. Hell, it's a tragic story. And there are a number of other companies. We've seen the Brait issue. There was a very good editorial in the Business Day this morning about the hubris of the directors. You've had Tongaat. We've had so many companies where management have just destroyed value. I don't know, trying to pursue whatever. I don't know. Everybody... Who knows? I don't know how to explain it, but I can never forgive managers who recklessly use shareholders' money. You can do it what you want with your own money. I don't care. You want to buy cryptocurrencies, you want to buy gold, platinum, whatever you want to do with it, you can hedge, you can buy hedge funds. But when you're responsible for other people's money, you have to act in their best interest. And I think some of the management that we've seen, management has been acting in their own best interest, not in the interest of their shareholders or other stakeholders.
You sound quite passionate about that. I mean, you're obviously a shareholder activist, which is incredibly important. But Tongaat Hewlett, you say it's got a 650 million rand market cap. What is the debt? It must be in the billions. The debt must be in the billions.
I don't know what it's. I haven't got the number in front of me, and I don't want to embarrass myself by taking a guess at it. But it is enormous. How they get the company back on its feet can only be done with the help of banks who would be prepared to lend. The problem is with that. When you owe money, you haven't got the. You haven't got the comfort of equity, equity money, which you don't really have to repay. Equity people take a risk. Banks want their money back, and that puts pressure on you. So how they ever get this out of the trouble that it's in, I don't know. It's a tragic story because as long as I've been here, and today I celebrate my 48th year on the market.
I was going to say about that because I saw
48 years. I joined in 1972, and
tell me your history briefly.
I mean,
1972, you started on the JSE Securities Exchange under the wing of your father, I imagine.
Well, I joined Max Pollock and Fremantle. Yeah, I went to the floor. I was trading on the floor. I was running orders up and down.
Yes.
But I think throughout my time, I've seen companies come and go. And as you mentioned, there's some royal companies that we had. And that one was, Tongaat was always what you would call a blue-blooded, not only a blue chip, but a blue-blooded, a very noble family, the Hewlett family, were involved in Tongaat Hewlett. Sugar barons, whatever you want to call them, but a very prominent family in KZN, in Natal. And to see what's come of it now is just tragic. And it was all ego. It was businessmen trying to keep up the expectations that the market expected, never admitting the truth. Things are tough, whether that was for their own self-enrichment you know, in order to up their own number one, their their own shares and keep the share prices up. But you know, honesty is the best, and it's I've seen more businessmen fail because of that, where they wouldn't, you know, they didn't want to disclose the truth to shareholders. If they disclose the truth, people understand. Yes, you get marked down a little bit, but at least they understand where they are, and you don't get the complete collapse of a business.
Let's talk about something else. We've spoken about coronavirus, okay. And I believe that when I see figures on a Thursday or a Friday that 10,000 people have been infected, and then on a Monday I see that 17,000 people have been infected, and the number of people who have died goes from 250 to 360, I think of my percentages, and I go into my little calculator and I think, goodness me, this is multiplying. This is almost like a pandemic going on. But anyway, your last word on coronavirus before we get to Boris Johnson.
I think we're getting into a situation where it's now 2 weeks. So that incubation period is going to reveal an increase in the number of cases. But I don't think it's reached the proportions, or certainly the deathly proportions, that perhaps we were anticipating early on. You know, we haven't seen deaths in the United States. We've seen one death in the Philippines. And maybe it's a very, you know, it's a virus that one has to keep an eye on. And I think it's going to be more. You know, this is not the end of that, particularly in a world where we travel a lot and we're exposed to so many other societies and cultures.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. But I think this one may be credit to the Chinese for doing what they have done in trying to contain it. But Lindsay, again, last word, it's going to cost us. You know, there's going to be some hurt as a result of this, economic hurt.
Yeah, indeed. The Dow Jones up about 130 points at the moment. The S&P up 0.75%. Let's go on to Boris Johnson now, because he's given a speech. And now he's got his way. He's now sort of wielding his power, almost a Trump-like power. And he's talking about a hard Brexit, or rather his words are suggesting a hard Brexit. The pound has fallen 1.3%. This is also a dangerous situation.
Totally. Totally. I think the reality is going to hit. And it's all very well to make strong speeches, you know. I'm not sure that he's a Churchill and that he's going to get the crowds behind him and to, you know, to gather that the same kind of spirit that Churchill did. But this is going to be a lot tougher. You know, this is going to be a lot tougher than the bravado that we're seeing at the moment. I wouldn't go long of the pound. I wouldn't go long of the UK economy. There are a couple of companies that I like there that might be worth holding on, like Royal Dutch Shell, even though they're having issues. But I promise you, it's very difficult to put a decent portfolio of UK companies together. So for choice, stay with the US or stay with Europe, even though Europe's also under a little bit of pressure at the moment.
It's got no growth. I mean, it's as simple as that. I mean, it's got absolutely no growth, including Germany.
I always call it. I call it a historical theme park.
Yes, exactly.
Europe.
It's a tourism hub. I mean, it's as simple as that. Yeah. I mean, no, it's unfair. I mean, Germany is an economic dynamo, a manufacturing dynamo. And even when you look at Italy, Italy has got some incredible companies. I was speaking to
Germany's
an Italian economist the other day.
Germany's number four. Anyway, so Italy must come in six or seven,
Precisely. So it's doing quite well. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you know, you go to a European city, and as you say, it's like a theme park. People walking down the cobbled streets, going into a bistro or a pizzeria or something. You think, oh, this is very quaint.
They have got dogs instead of children. Yeah, it's too much trouble to produce children.
Same as Japan, David. Yeah, so what you're right. Just on that note, I know we're a little bit late today, so you've got to get off somewhere else, but just put together your European, your international portfolio. I know you love Ferrari. What else do you love?
I love Ferrari. There's a company still, which is in your part of the woods, called ASML. Love that a lot. Mm-hmm. Great company. And what you've got to do, Lindsay, you've got to read the transcript with the CEO after the results, you know, just pointing out what lies ahead, how exciting it is. That's still good. I still, you know, Nestle, Allianz is your part of the, is Germany still a very good company with a very higher yield, a dividend yield of over 4%. And listen, you've got the luxury good company. Don't write them off. Still doing pretty well there. Ferrari I like. So you go for this in Holland. You've got ASML. What's the other Dutch company? Royal Dutch Shell.
Hey, yes.
Yeah, they have bad results. Bad results. They're cutting back on their dividends. We know that, but they'll soon recover. Medical companies, Medtronic, you know, I still like the whole medical theme. That's an Irish-based company that's actually in it's still listed in the U.S. What else? You know, Novartis coming back, eh? It's had a rough time, but we started to see some of the pharmaceutical companies pick up again. This is besides all the, you know, I'm still a big fan of Alphabet and Amazon and Facebook and those companies. Visa was hurt a little on Friday after its results. But, I mean, when you look at the absolute numbers it produces, great. And Microsoft. So, but ASML, I'm just saying, if you've got just a few minutes, read their transcript. And why I'm saying read their transcript, because it points to the demand for semiconductors. And if semiconductors are in demand, it means equipment's in demand. And, you know, you take the whole supply chain right down to the end user. It gives you an idea what lies ahead in technology.
What about Diageo? I saw an interview with the CEO. I'm trying to get him onto the show. Diageo, have you seen their drinks brand portfolio? It is quite extraordinary. And you think to yourself, when was the last time you didn't have something to do with Diageo? Mm. It's an extraordinary company. Would you put Diageo in there?
I've got Diageo.
Yeah. Oh, good. It's a great company.
They're up
isn't
about
it?
3% today. You know that?
Oh, I didn't know that. No.
Yeah. They got, I think they got Johnny Walker. They got Smirnoff. What else they got? They got some good brand. We need people to drink a little bit more whiskey. Yeah. I think the Indians have been letting us down a bit. They haven't been doing as much as they should.
Dr. Shapiro has his medical.
You know, I got into trouble before. I got into trouble. I was cynically saying, you know, we need people to smoke and drink more. And I got a lady from Cape Town who's in one of these places where they treat, you know, the cancer cases. And, gave me a blast. And I said, quite right. So I had to withdraw my remarks, and I withdraw them now. I'm just having fun.
I'm just having a look now at the website. I mean, they own Guinness, first of all. I mean, if you want to have a breakfast beer and drink more, then the whiskies you've got. It's an extraordinary business.
Yeah, yeah. And I think what's happening is that you're getting younger people. They're not, you know, drinking responsibly. I don't think these are the irresponsible drinks, but it's becoming accepted, you know, to have a whiskey or to mix it. And credit to the companies as well, because they're making it more popular in the way that they market it. So, yeah, it's a good business. I prefer it to the beers, hey? I prefer it to the beer companies. Mm. I prefer Diageo. Yeah. Good. I would rather have this than AB InBev or Carlsberg or any of the others, Heineken, etc. I prefer Diageo, yeah.
Johnny Walker, Crown Royal, Buchanan's, Windsor, Don Julio, the tequila, Smirnoff, of course, Kettle One, which is a Dutch vodka company, Captain Morgan, Bailey's, Tanqueray, Guinness, and the list goes on. It's almost a monopoly. Let's go from the sublime to the ridiculous. I watched a football match yesterday between Burnley and Arsenal. It was 0-0. I don't think I've ever been more depressed in my life.
At the poor quality of soccer.
The poor quality. Like a kickabout on a Sunday morning down the local park. It was pathetic.
That's what's happened to British soccer in the mid. It is rather tragic. I think that if you watch Man City and Spurs as well, there were some moments, but no finish and no brilliance to actually, you know, talk about. I was very disappointed in the game. I think a lot of the players, just from Aguero to De Bruyne, very good, but just couldn't produce the magic. And when you look at Liverpool, that's the only team that can actually take a long ball and convert it. They attack with speed. We're not seeing that in Man City anymore. And for Spurs, to be honest, I know they won the game, but there wasn't really anything there. I don't know how you saw it, but halfway through I decided to read the Financial Times, and that's got to be really epitomized. Can you imagine watching Spurs and Man City and picking up the Financial Times? I mean, hell.
No, it is. I mean, Liverpool are 22 points clear, and there's a reason why they're 22 points clear, because the rest is rubbish. Manchester City apparently over the summer is going to clear out all its players. I mean, Aguero is brilliant, but he's too old, and De Bruyne, he's also got to go. And if Pep stays, he's going to be given $200-300 million to rebuild the team.
And Ryan Sterling, I don't know, everybody gets very, not upset, they're very upbeat about him, and I think he's a brilliant player. I just watch him say, okay, now do something. I don't know. To me, he's way, way over. He's fast, but he's certainly not a Messi or any of those Barcelona players who are just brilliant on the ball and that. You know, he runs fast, etc. But hell, they should have put this in the bag and missing a penalty. Anyway,
yeah, man,
not going to say anything. But I just find that sitting through a match is very difficult these days.
Yeah, I sat through Barcelona versus Levante last night. But they've got this young chap. He debuted when he was 16. His name is Ansu Fati. He's from Guinea-Bissau, but now he's become a Spanish national. And he and Messi combined beautifully for two goals. He's 17 years old, and he's scoring on this stage. He's a genius. We don't have that in Britain. Yeah. We don't have that in the English league. There's no one coming through the ranks that are really as brilliant as that.
No.
Anyway, David.
No, it's sad. And Liverpool just beat everybody. Credit to them. I've credit. So you, when you watch them, you say 2-0 up. Okay, turn off. Nothing else is going to happen.
David Shapiro is the deputy chairman. Now, just before you go, just give yourself a pat on the back, because you've had some milestones today, which you've put out on Twitter. What's happened? You've been where for how long, etc.?
No, I've been at Sasswin for 15 years, but I've been on the market 48. It would have, unfortunately, it broke my. And I would have been at the one firm for 48 years, but when SocGen pulled out the country in 2002, you know, that was the firm has taken a kind of meandering route that caused me to break service, and I rejoined like 2.5 years later after small stints somewhere. But that's because of circumstance. So basically, I've spent almost 46 years at this place.
But 48 years in the market, which is probably makes you the
I'm
most experienced person in the JSC.
And
and one day you'll probably get a proper job. Yeah.
Exactly.
David Shapiro, thank you very much for your time. At the moment, anyway, you're the deputy chairman of Sasswin Securities in Johannesburg. And that was Shapiro World. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors, and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.